No, I honestly don't know the man.
Well, understandably, Bob is pretty broken up by all of this. And he asked me to ask you if you'd be willing to be a pallbearer at Carl's funeral.
A pallbearer? Mm-hmm. At Carl's funeral? Well, I don't... I'm flattered. It's quite an honor to be.
He would say yes.
And normally I would. I would, but my back, I have back issues, honey, you know, my back.
Your back. Oh, it's terrible. And his arms are so weak. Little muscles like corn nuts.
Yeah, we're just talking about my back, sweetheart.
It's awful.
TBTL.
Here live at the Waterfront Village with my friend, the zombie, Jonathan. You're looking good. Jonathan just got an awesome face paint job. What do you think?
I like turtles.
That's not how it works. That's not how any of this works.
Could one say that a book is nothing more than a painting of words, which are the notes on the tapestry of the greatest film ever sculpted?
One could say that. But should one?
All right. Hello, good morning, and welcome, everybody, to a Monday edition of TBTL, the show that just might be too beautiful to live.
To unemployed guys that hired each other to go forward.
That's how we got into this game. My name is Luke Burbank. I am your host.
It's your lucky day. You just found a USB flash drive in the parking lot.
Coming to you from the Intercontinental Hotel in St. Paul, Minnesota, perched high above the banks of the frozen Mississippi River. I didn't know it did that. Apparently it does. This time of year, I'm looking out at it. I don't know if people downriver know that is happening. Seems like it could be a problem, but there it is, the frozen Mississippi River in all of its majesty. This is going to be a magical time here, episode 3074 in a collector series.
Let the fun begin.
We got wild animals in the news, people, right here in the land of a thousand lakes in Moorhead, Minnesota. They've got a wild turkey problem.
Who you calling turkey?
It seems like every time we're here doing the show, there's some kind of an issue involving me being menaced by turkeys and other people. In fact, that's what generated one of the greatest drops in the history of TBTL.
I'm flying in hot for that hottie.
That was a turkey-related story also from right here in Minnesota. It's not just turkeys in Moorhead, Minnesota, though. It's also vultures in Texas that are going number two on a border patrol radio tower and completely ruining the radio tower's ability to broadcast radio signals. So we'll talk about that. And there's an 88-year-old guy in Maine who keeps getting attacked by rabid foxes. And he is handling it much better than I would have, because the story of multiple rabid fox attacks on the same random 88-year-old guy is harrowing. Harrowing, I say. So we'll talk about all that, plus emails and V-mails. And this guy, longest-running Cobro of the show, known for his drawings of tall ships, their grace, their majesty. He'd like to welcome you to a very special place known as
Scatman's World.
He is Andrew Walsh. He's joining me right now, not from here in St. Paul, but actually from the Roosevelt neighborhood of Seattle, Washington. I guess you decided to cancel your trip out here. That's weird.
Yeah, you know, it occurred to me that we could save a little bit of cash if you just represented both of us at the big TBTL company retreat in St. Paul. So if you could just take care of that, I'd appreciate it, and I'll just be back here. I'll be in the cut.
So how am I going to... Yes, that's exactly what it means. You and Omar will be in the cut. Okay. How am I going to trust fall... and catch myself, Andrew.
That's the whole point of this. There's a whole team of people there who are going to catch you, Luke. This whole thing is going to be an exercise in you and I being less codependent and rely more on the people around us.
Yeah, but I like being codependent with you because you do all the stuff.
Yeah, that's I like being codependent with you. Could be one of those shirts written in that, what do we say it is?
Ooh,
playlist script font.
Yes.
I like being codependent with you. I love it.
Should we get those made? yes. I'll get those made, and then on Monday when we stroll in. So here's the we'll be wearing them. Now, here's the thing.
Mm-hmm.
You, in fact, are coming out here to Minnesota. We are recording this on a Saturday, and you are yet to travel out here. And the reason is because we are going to be in meetings all week, but in particular Monday there is – I don't actually even – it's been explained many times via email, and I have just not looked closely enough. But it seems like they're – bringing every resource to bear and every different team related to on-demand programming, specifically TBTL, every single team is going to – we're going to spend some time with them, the marketing folks, all of the different wings of APM On Demand are going to try to help make TBTL at least a little bit more popular. Is that what's happening mm-hmm. on Monday?
Popular is definitely part of it. I think, you know, marketing will be part of this and promotions will be part of this, but also just like I think we're going to be meeting with the fundraising people. Now, here's what – and this is just a language thing, but I got to say I started to get a little bit – I don't know if nervous is the right word, but – I felt like the tone changed a little bit when it went from an all-day meeting to being called a retreat.
Right.
Why am I scared of the word retreat? What did a retreat ever do to me that makes me not want to? I'm not trying to poop on the process here. I think it'll be good. I think we work with a lot of people that we've never met face to face. I think that there's a lot of new faces there. I feel like good things are in the future for APM and hopefully for us as well. But then when the word retreat is thrown in there, I'm like, wait, does TBTL do retreats?
We do now, apparently.
We do.
Do you know anything about this, like these meetings? Like, so we're going to try to make the show more successful. Mm-hmm. Should we tell them about Margaret and the fact that she's asking about how to download the show extra time so
Margaret.
Some sweet, sweet download numbers? I mean,
that's
one strategy.
I never got back to Margaret. I hope she heard yesterday's show or whenever we were talking about that. Maybe we can figure out that whole thing. Yeah. Oh, by the way. I was going to say maybe we can figure out a way to juice the numbers or other ways.
Yeah,
but that's not right, is it? Genevieve and I were recording our very popular podcast about commercials called After These Messages last week,
mm-hmm.
and I said something about juice the stats, and she said no, it's juke the stats, or maybe she said juke the stats, and
not juke the stats.
It is though. I looked it up. If you type in juice the stats, you get a bunch of juice companies trying to sell you juice. But if you look up juke the stats, it's a thing. Go ahead.
Because like if you were like, you know, if you're in a football game, if you juked a guy, to juke someone in a sporting context is to kind of, you know, do a little move that sends them in the wrong direction, which I guess if you're juking the stats, you're tweaking them. You're misleading people with stats. Just like a running back would be misleading the defender when he jukes him. And by the way, it hurts when a running back lies to you. When you're set up, you get your feet planted. You're focusing on his midsection. You're going to take him down legally, and then he lies to you and says, "Nope, I'm not going that way. I'm going the other way."
And then what are you supposed to do with that? And then how do you build trust on that? But I don't know if you're doing the same Googling I am. It sounds like it might have a lot of people are referring back to The Wire, but it seems like it does maybe have its origins in police work. It says this is reading off of thinkprogress.org. Juking the stats is a crime reduction strategy. You code aggravated assaults as simple assaults. You code robberies as larcenies. And presto, changeo, violent crime is down. So I'm getting all kinds of results on juking the stats. Again, a lot of them pointing back to David Simon. But juicing the stats gives me nothing.
There was a great piece written a few years ago about, and I'm going to use a bad word here, but the term putting my ass in a jackpot. Now you've got my ass in the jackpot, because there was a baseball game where I believe it was an umpire was mic'd up, or somehow an umpire was like arguing with a manager or a player, and the umpire was saying, "You know, you got my ass in the jackpot." And then that's a police thing too, I think.
Oh, okay. I remember you talking about that. That kind of popped up. Again, and as we have these conversations about language, it's really important for me that the listeners are picturing all of these phrases in that script we were talking about, the playlist script that you can see on a yoga shirt or a throw pillow. Oh, by the way, I got to throw this out here. Moments before we started the show, boy, I was worried I wouldn't have anything to say today on this Saturday. I got plenty. I'm all juked up.
Yeah, you are.
somebody wrote in, Remember, I was on that font page, and I was reading all of the different examples that were on throw pillows and whatnot in that script. And then I said, oh, here's a pillow that says the quick brown fox jumped over the lazy dog. People are writing in to explain to me that that is a sentence that uses every letter of the alphabet. I just want everybody to know
is
I realized
that. Is that what its significance is?
Oh, you didn't know that. Yeah, no, I knew that. I was making
a joke about it.
I
have seen that a million times, but I don't think I ever actually knew why it was significant. I thought maybe it was like an eats, shoots, and leaves situation. You know what I mean? Where it was like some kind of a – I thought it was maybe something grammatical or something.
No, because when you go – if you go to any font page, they'll often have that there so you can see what every single font looks like, but not just in alphabetical order. It gives you a sense. I think I learned that from Peanuts, by the way. I think Snoopy used to type that. Could be wrong.
Oh, really?
Well, he definitely used to type it as a long and rainy night, I think. A dark and stormy night.
Okay, so just to wrap this up, you're feeling good about whatever is actually happening to us on Monday as people are hearing this. You feel like we're in the meeting. Is there anything you want to make – is there anything that I should really definitely not do in there?
Oh, wow. Yeah. I mean, I guess there's a lot of things. I mean, do we have to – starting with
smoking?
Just everything? Like, don't
smoke,
building?
I
would say. It is a non-smoking building.
Isn't it happening in some other building, too? Like, I've been seeing a lot of emails about the location. Are they – I mean, are they ashamed of us? Are we allowed in the normal building at 8 p.m.?
Well, they're allowed to smoke in the Kling Broadcast Center.
Oh,
and
that's
I
why
said
we're
going to
be there.
I said we wanted a non-smoking conference room. I apologize. Mm. Yeah.
Yeah. Can you run those things by me, please, Andrew?
Yeah. Sorry. I didn't realize. You're hard to keep up with. But we're going to be at the Glenn Nelson Center, which
I'm
is another 8 p.m.
I'm using Bozo now a lot. I'm trying to think.
Good. You can't get honey from wasps. yeah, we're going to be in the Glenn Nelson Center, which is another 8 p.m. property that I've never been into before. I think it's kind of a... incubator kind of space, maybe?
I've been here in St. Paul just kind of doing some recon, figuring out the lay of the land. First of all, I know that Brisket is back at Herbert and Gerbert's.
Oh, good.
So just right behind you. So just get ready for that. Emotionally prepare yourself for that. There is this sandwich. There's a sandwich shop around the corner from us. I think it's a Minnesota thing, Herbert and Gerbert's. And I went over there. And I got a delicious veggie sandwich, but they also are advertising this sandwich that I really think would make a person pre-diabetic to eat one bite of it. It is – I took a picture of it too. The big sign says Brisket is back, and it is mac and cheese barbecue brisket sandwich. So a barbecue brisket that then has mac and cheese on it, then has a bun, then has some – I don't know what it is. Horseradish on top of it? It is the weirdest looking thing ever. But just so you know, Brisket's back at Herbert and Gerbert's.
Have you seen the commercials, and have we already talked about this, for those KFC chicken bowls that look like the grossest thing I've ever seen in my life? They put, like, I think mashed potatoes down and then, like breaded chicken chunks, and then they pile it with, I think, with mac and cheese, and then they pour brown gravy over the whole thing, and then they sprinkle corn on there. Have you seen these commercials?
No, but I'm reminded of the – isn't that a Patton Oswalt bit, like a bucket of sadness? And that
oh,
just
maybe.
Basically the idea is you just – like a horse, you just strap one of those KFC bowls to your face. It's like a feed bag.
Oh, my God. I'm looking at them now, Luke. They're so gross. I don't know if you want to do it on the show or not. I mean, I think that because, I don't eat a lot of these things. I'm not going to eat mac and cheese. That doesn't sound good to me anyway. But, like, just seeing all of these foods combined, even if you love mac and cheese, I don't know who this looks good to. It just – I mean, it looks like something that one would make at 2 a.m. while very stoned. And maybe that's what they're going for, trying
that's
to get some
demo.
Of that stoner market. Yeah.
By the way, on the subject of those KFC ads, the latest Colonel is not a famous person, and I don't know how I feel about that. I mean, he's not a super famous person. I think we talked about this maybe off air. I was Googling him. He's just a random guy. I'm talking about the Colonel who has longer hair and who kind of dances with Mrs. Butterworth or something.
Oh, okay. I know that one. Yeah, that's been around for a while now,
but that
I think.
Person is not famous, which is weird to me because he looks nothing like whatever we think of the Colonel as looking like. And he's not famous. He's a kind of working actor, I guess. But it's just a weird swerve because the whole thing was they kept, they had Sean Astin, a.k.a. Rudy, doing it for a while. They had – oh, by the way, very nice kid who – what was Rudy doing for me? He was driving me around, one of these young Enterprise kids that I now have picking me up day and night. his name was Rudy, and I was so excited. I said, that's my dog's name. And he had a look on his face like, is that a compliment?
What should I do with that information? Yes. I, you know, your relationship with the Enterprise rental picker-uppers is getting similar to my dad's relationship with the Nerd Squad. Or whatever
call the geeks.
And I'm just wondering if there's a way we could combine these two services. We could serve
maybe
both
Enterprise
you
will
my...
bring a Geek Squad right. employee to your dad's house to turn his Wi-Fi router on and off.
We're here to pick you up, but first we're going to fix that remote control problem that's been bugging you.
One last thing on Herbert and Gerberts, I can't get past this. Their tagline is "Bold between the breads." How do you feel about that?
Not good. Not good.
It kind of. I also feel like it kind of doesn't work. It's like, you know, we talk a lot about like, you know, hair. Like, what was like a hair cutting place in New Hampshire that was just quite.
Main Element. Well, that was one I get. Yeah, that's. But it sounds. I also feel the same way about Massage Envy. It sort of sounds like it's a play on words, but it's not.
Why did that? Yeah, where did that? Why was that the name? And that is, I would assume, the biggest national chain of massage places, which, by the way, I grew up calling it Massage. I think because my mom might say Massage.
Is that a Philly thing or just a
– I think it's my mom. My mom says UB for a U-turn.
Oh, I love that. Oh, man.
And you know, the sad part is I got into many arguments with people that it was UB into my 20s. Oh, no, you mean UB. No one calls it a UB. It's UB. Okay.
I just love it. I mean, you were young and naive enough just to assume that everything that your parents told you was correct.
And I've probably now swung too far the other way where I assume nothing they told me was correct. Probably somewhere in the middle. Okay, last question. Are you ready for the trip? How are you feeling? Because you're going to get on an airplane tomorrow. I know that that's kind of a... You know, that's a production for you, and you like to have all your ducks in a row, as it were. Are you feeling good about your trip out here?
I just had a thought that isn't about the trip that actually is making me nervous now. You know what I just thought of? We're talking about food that I don't like.
Uh-oh. They're going to cater
lunch. I'll bet you they'll provide some sort of sandwiches at midday, and I won't want the sandwiches because they'll have, like, cheese and mayonnaise on them.
What if we get the brisket with... with mac and cheese on it from Herbert and Gerberts.
What if right before I show up on Monday morning, I just come in with one of these KFC bowls and I just set it on the table in front of me the whole time and just let it steam up the
Colonel.
Room. And maybe I wear one of those ties. Sure. What does he got? He doesn't have a bolo tie.
I'm talking full on. No, I want a full on mustache, glasses, the whole thing, and then do not comment on it. If we really want it, that is a power move. If you're dressed as the Colonel and I'm dressed as Mrs. Butterworth and we don't say anything about it, we just sit there across the table from these skilled professionals that we work with who handle different elements of this thing, and at no point do we reference what we're dressed as. We just go through all the meetings like normal.
But I feel like people would ask. I mean, it's a tricky situation because it's like kind of like if you assume somebody's pregnant and they're not, so you got to be kind of careful. Like, what if this is just the way we dress? We don't, you know, they don't, we don't work with these folks on a day-to-day basis in person. Maybe it would be bold to say, hey, why are you dressed up like the Colonel? And I just said, what do you mean? I'm just wearing a white suit. This is how
you know what else? Do you know what else is going to happen? I just realized. And this is probably why you were a little nervous for us to discuss the topic of our retreat. There are probably, of the 20 people we'll be meeting with, I would say 19 to 20 of them are probably not daily listeners to the show. And I don't blame them for that. But, you know, most people probably will tune into one episode because they're like, we should have some frame of reference for this show we're trying to help out. And they're going to listen to this episode. So could you do me a kindness? Could you post this very late on Monday?
Yeah. Well, that's kind of what I would – I actually think that we'll most likely have – I didn't really think about this, but Friday's show would be – yeah, because we're recording this on Saturday.
Well, Friday's
this will
show
post.
Was great.
Was it good? I don't remember what we talked about.
I don't know.
How scatological
it can't be worse
was
than
it?
This.
Where
not
was it on the scatological
very.
Scale? Okay.
It was low. I mean, today is going to be – I mean, first
Scatman's
of all –
Scatman's World.
And, you know, when I put poop into iTunes to find audio drops to drag into my new system, it is – I'm reminded of how much we talk about number two on the show. I have probably 30 different poop-related drops that I can choose from.
You know what I really do want is and I'll bet you this is out there, but I would love a program that I could just have scan my drop folder and make me a pie chart of what's in there. Because, like, I know that, I mean, I have, how many drops do I have? I know it's in the thousands, and some of these are like musical things too, but just my general folder where I just dump all of my drops has about 2,900 things in it right now. And I would love to see a pie chart, like how many of those are 30 Rock? And I'm pretty good at labeling my stuff. So if it's 30 Rock, it'll show up that way. The Simpsons will take up a pretty big part of it. And if we could just like kind of like, you know, analyze the data, we could see how, like, what percentage of your drops are poop related.
About 92%.
92%.
That's sort of back of the envelope, but I think it's probably pretty close. So, okay, so you're flying out here on Sunday. You got your ticket.
Yeah, it'll be fine. I don't know. Seat. I'm not you're good. Too, yeah, I don't think that. I mean, I'm flying Alaska. I think my flight. I mean, my flight's in the mid morning, so I got to get up. You know, I'll probably have to get up, you know, in the 6 or 7 o'clock hour to get to the airport, which is earlier than I usually wake up on a Sunday, clearly, but it's not like some sort of really early flight where it's going to kind of ruin my weekend. I'm really looking forward to seeing you. I mean, basically, I'm going to land, and then you and I are going to go see the football game. I almost said I'm looking forward to seeing you, but what I meant to say was I'm looking forward to seeing you so that we can watch a football game together.
No, I mean, I value your honesty more than, you know, empty compliments about wanting to see me. Yeah, it's a big football weekend here because as we're recording this, it's Saturday. The Vikings are going to play in a couple hours, and this town is turned out for that game. Everybody's in purple. Everybody's excited. And I'm excited because I really want the Vikings to win as well, not just because I love I love the state of Minnesota. I love our friend the Stubot, all the people we work with. Everyone's, well, with the exception of our former boss, El Ropo Nelson, noted Packer fan. But generally, it's fun to be in this city and to be very on board with the local team. Because it, you know, just as well could be, or just easily could be a situation where I kind of secretly need them to lose. In this case, it's better if they win. It's a tall order. They're going to play in San Francisco. And then the Seahawks are playing in Green Bay, which is also a tall order. So both teams are probably underdogs, but I have hope. I have irrational hope, per usual. The thing I was going to say though is, and then we should probably go to a break because we're overdue. I bring this up a lot on the show now. My idea of trying to find, instead of trying to always improve my circumstances and therefore feel a little bit more happy or a little more content, I'm trying to learn, or at least I would like to work on just being content regardless of the circumstances. Then it's, you know, I'm less affected by what's going on. Yesterday I flew, it was a short flight, but I flew from Chicago here to Minneapolis on an airline that I don't have any status with. And boy, Andrew, I was really practicing my Ram Dass, my being there then, which wouldn't be a terrible show title, Be There Then. Also sounds like the beginning of a hymn. But anyway, I was in the way back of the plane. I was in a middle seat. It was no leg room. And it sucked. I don't want to do that. I've decided on a new plan, which is really figure out how to always be in first class.
Mm-hmm. Just become very super rich. And that, I think, brings us back to what Monday's meetings are all about, is how can we become billionaires from podcasting? Mm-hmm. I think that's the name.
Podcast game.
Can I just throw one thing at you, only because you evoked him a moment ago?
Steve Nelson. I know that was out of time, but whatever.
Of course, he lives in Minnesota, so I shot him a note just to say, hey, man, we're going to be in town if you happen to be around. I know he's a very busy man. He's a very important man at NPR. He's got a vibrant
family life.
In fact, last
night, apparently, he was flying back from, I assume, D.C. He was flying back to the Twin Cities from somewhere, and Ben Folds was on his flight, and he was tweeting about it. That's just the kind of high-profile jet-set person that our former boss, Steve Nelson, now is.
So I just wrote to him saying, hey, we're going to be in town, and he wrote back. He said, oh, I'd love to, but honestly, it's a really my nights are booked up with family stuff all next week, and I have my days are really crazy with work. And then he says, sorry, man, would love to connect and talk trash about how the Packers will have beaten the Seahawks. That's the kind of response. I was like, hey, friendo, I'm coming to town. Would love to see you again. And this is the kind of garbage talk I get back. And that's why I don't like Green Bay.
Well, you know what? It's funny you would say that because the Lyft ride, excuse me, the Uber ride, because our company does not honor Lyft rides. Mm-hmm. I learned the hard way. The Uber that I took from the airport here was piloted by a extremely strident Packers fan. By the way, I actually like Packers fans. And this guy was fine, but the problem was he was all over the map with everything. So, in other words, he was talking about how he thinks all the games are rigged.
Oh, okay.
And he thinks that the league – and I've been hearing this a lot lately. Okay, so one – the big conspiracy theory in Minnesota – I might have talked about this last time we were here. The big conspiracy theory in Minnesota is that 2 years ago, the same season where the Minnesota Vikings had that, like, remarkable catch, the Minnesota Miracle, where Diggs caught that ball on the last play and they beat the Saints. That same season, they ended up not getting to the Super Bowl, which was in here in Minneapolis. And the theory is that the NFL – or excuse me, the city of Minneapolis and the NFL colluded to make sure that Minnesota was not in that game because it would not have led to as much hotel sales because everybody who lives here would have just been in town for the game. So the theory is that somehow the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce got the NFL to force the Vikings to not play well enough to get into the Super Bowl. And I have heard this from – at least five people in Minnesota now, Andrew, who and including my the Lyft or the Uber driver rather. And the funniest part was he was he loves Aaron Rodgers, right? And he was talking how Aaron Rodgers is going to crush the Seahawks. I was like, you know, you're probably right. But then in the same breath, he was talking about how Aaron Rodgers regularly loses games on purpose because the league makes him. And I was like, how could you be a fan of a person who is like you like this guy even though you think he regularly loses games on purpose?
Well, I guess it works because if you're a fan of his, you think that he can't lose. He would win all the time. So on the occasions that he does lose, he's
it's
being forced to. Yeah, he's being forced to.
And then I said, how do you – I go, what's the mechanics for this? I go, how does the league – how does the NFL actually make a team lose? And he goes, oh, payoffs. I was like, I understand that you think they get money, but like on a just practical level, is it like is one receiver supposed to drop the ball at a certain critical moment? Like, you know, like how does the conspiracy actually work? And then he didn't have a lot of answers to that. There was another thing, too. He said he goes, this is one of the things he goes, oh, well, the NFL teams lose games all the time on purpose. I've got proof. And I said, okay, what's your proof? And he goes, well, I don't have any specific games I can point to. It's like, okay, go pack.
He does. One thing that he definitely knows, though, is there are briefcases full of money, and they are handcuffed to the people who are carrying them. That's for sure.
And, absolutely. And there was one other – I can't remember it now, but there was this one other thing where I was trying to come up with like – I for some reason became obsessed with trying to prove to this random Uber driver that the NFL is not rigged. And by the way, the NFL isn't the greatest – sports league. In fact, there's a lot of really legitimate criticism of it as a league. I just don't think – I don't think that they're telling players to not catch the football, you know. Anyway, I said something like, would you rather win the Super Bowl or have $1 million? And before I could even finish, he goes, $1 million. $1 million. And it was – because I was trying to say basically like an Aaron Rodgers or a Russell Wilson, any of these people that have dedicated their life to this, they want to win the Super Bowl more than they want to be bribed out of winning the Super Bowl. But he was like, yeah, $1 million. It's so much money. And I was like, okay, all right, I guess I can see this is not working.
Right. I mean, you could earn that $1 million by just winning more games and getting a sweeter contract next year. Like $1 million, I'm not to say it's insignificant, but it's not a huge – $1 million is not a huge portion of one of these contracts. It's like – that's like you bonk somebody in the head with a helmet twice. Boom, you're out of cold mill.
Yeah. Rudolph started it. Okay. Yeah. Let's – take a quick break, and then we'll come back. We'll talk about the various animals in the news and anything else that comes into our minds here on a Monday edition of TBTL. Stay with us.
In this dirty old part of the city, where the sun refused to shine, people tell me there ain't no use in trying. Now, my girl, you're so young and pretty.
What is this?
It's the animals. We got to get out of this place. I think you'll recognize it in a second.
Oh, this is what that becomes. I don't think I've ever heard the. I've never heard the lead up.
It's a little ominous, huh?
You know me.
Watch my daddy in bed and crying. Watch his habit turning greater. He's been working and slaving his life away. Oh, yes, I know.
I'm sorry. Sorry, I thought the chorus came a lot sooner than it does. We're still building our way up to it. Do we wait for
That's
it, or
fine.
Do we just move on? Okay.
I got nothing but time.
Okay. Here we go. Here we go. It's going to happen. We gotta get out
of this place. I thought this was the Rolling Stones, Andrew.
I can
hard
see
rock.
Yeah, it's got that early Rolling Stones kind of garagey sound to it. I don't think that's the most foolish thing to think.
I'm of course, stoked that we're staying in the same hotel, Andrew, and this is a cool hotel. I'm also very excited that it is on the Mississippi River. It's beautiful. Remember our fun walk we took last
yes.
time we were here? It got right up to the edge of being a date, and I was cool with that.
And then we climbed a tower, and I got a little bit nervous.
I know. That was not... Even I was a little sketched out by that. But anyway.
It didn't even occur to me until we were at the top. How
I know. I felt so bad for you because we're also not supposed to be up there. So there was a lot of elements going on there. But no, I'm stoked about this hotel. I will say one thing, though, is I don't – my room is nice and everything. What I don't like about it is on both sides, it has those kinds of doors that are – so you could potentially rent two hotel rooms and then open the door between them.
Sure.
Usually you might get one of those in a room. I've got them on both sides of the room. I'm in what I guess would be the middle room of some – if the Sultan of Brunei came and stayed at this hotel, they'd take over a whole chain of these rooms. But I can hear the people – nothing like of note is happening, but I can just hear people just chatting on both sides, which means they can hear me doing the show right now. And I like put – I took the extra blanket out of the closet. Now I'm just whispering. I don't know why this matters 30 minutes into the show. They've already heard – well, they heard my best stuff already. I have a tight 15
sure.
on our retreat. But anyway, I put like a towel or a blanket under the – like as if the other room was on fire and I was trying to keep the smoke out.
Uh-huh.
I put that down. It didn't do any good. I'm trying to – I mean this is the only show I'm actually going to do from the hotel room. So it is what it is. But – I am feeling a little self-conscious because I know that, I guess on the plus side, we can report on Monday that we have more listeners. We have at least four new listeners who are hearing my half of this show
right.
through the walls of this hotel.
Do those count as downloads? Should we have listener Margaret
yes.
hit play four more times on behalf of them? Or maybe two yeah. more since they're only hearing half the show. We will have to find a place, I think, at some point to record a no-point conversion. And I don't think we have a studio for that, so we might. Although we could do it like a no-point from the street. How do you feel about that?
It's
like Luke and
freaking
Andrew
freezing here. I don't think we can stand outside very long.
That's well, good. We'll keep it short and to the point. The Seahawks won. They're going to the championship game.
We don't want to talk about sports too much. We have a whole show for that. But it is going to be if the heaven forbid, but the likely outcome will be that both the Vikings and the Seahawks will lose. I mean that's the smart money. Are we going to want to do a no point on Monday if the two teams that we've been rooting for both lost? I mean, I guess maybe it's a sort of a requiem for the season or something.
No, that's a good point. Well, I'll tell you what. I like keeping the door open. I like that we're having this conversation with the listeners. So, listeners, we are going to be in a meeting all day Monday. We may or may not have a no point. If you don't see a no point, nothing's broken except for our souls and maybe our
yes.
brains.
Exactly. Well put, Andrew, and I like that we have options now. All
mm-hmm.
right, let's do some top stories.
Hello and welcome to Top Story.
Not a ton to say about this first one other than wild turkeys are menacing the residents of Moorhead, Minnesota, Andrew, which just, feels like nothing's changed since the last time we were here. And I was jogging along the Mississippi, and I was being very afraid. I was feeling afraid and feeling menaced by those turkeys. Then there was that turkey that flew into a woman's window and shattered it because she was
mm-hmm.
the turkey saw its own reflection, I believe, was trying to mate with itself. That was the I'm coming in hot for that hottie moment. There was one quote. There is some disagreement in Moorhead, Minnesota, about these wild turkeys and if they are. If it's a nice little bit of local flavor or if it's actually dangerous and something that should be taken care of. This person, though, Brett Bernath, who lives in Moorhead, said there's about 20 or 30 turkeys that congregate in his backyard in the northwestern Minnesota city on the Red River. And then he goes on to say, as I scroll down here, He goes, I cannot walk in and out of my house or through my doors without tramping through their piles of bleep. You could swab my shoes right now. I'm covered in filth. My house is covered in filth. My pets eat it and they roll in it. My child plays in it. So that's one perspective. But then you have somebody else named Zanas Bear, who lives also in Moorhead. And Zanas says, I have many, many turkeys as my friends. I call them my friends. They are my neighbors. They are fellow living creatures. So those are the two ends of the spectrum in Moorhead, Minnesota on these turkeys.
So what happens when 20 or 30 wild turkeys come after my children? That's what I want to know.
Hey, nice callback. Where's my bell? You. That was pretty good.
Did my best. I was also wondering how many of the details I got right on that. Wasn't there an update to the wild hog story, by the way? Didn't there was like a wild hog issue that happened like a few months after that tweet went out, right?
Probably. I seem to remember that there was, I mean, even in the backlash, because everybody was making fun of the guy. For people that don't remember that meme, there was somebody, what did it start as an issue? Was it a gun question?
I think it was.
And a guy said something like, what was it, 30 feral? To 50 feral? Like, well, yeah, what am I supposed to do when I go inside for a minute and 30 to 50 feral hogs are attacking my children or something? But then, of course, then all the gun folks, they had to go out and find, like, try to find all this data that does support that feral hogs are a problem. And they are a problem, and they are really doing a lot of damage in cities. They're not that dangerous. They're more just like a menace to shrubbery and the like. But I don't know what the update on that was.
You're right. It was 30 to 50. And what I love is if you type in just like feral hog tweet, because I just wanted to get a little reminder of exactly what it was. The very first result on Google is the 30 to 50 feral hogs guy actually had a point. Luke, I will give you one guess as to what publication that was. This is tapping back into a line of humor from probably more like the early 2010s on this show, but it was often noted, this publication.
Oh, wow. Okay. Slate.
Slate, absolutely. Slate should change its name to, actually.
I know. I mean, I guess Slate is not just written by men, but I do feel like it's the mansplainiest, even though it's not. It's the splainiest of all of the publications. And there are some nice people that worked there. But I worked with a lot of those folks because Slate was partnered with NPR when I worked on Day to Day. And, you know, some of them were great. Some of them were less great. But they were a pretty splainy crowd. They're a bunch of smarty pantses.
Yeah, and I'm with you. I like kind of dunking on it because they release these headlines and it just becomes like it's just so slatey. It's just like you can see it from a mile away. But
why cancer is really good for you?
Yeah, right. But I don't actually. I like the publication, and like you say, I think they have a lot of good writers. I mean, even Pesca. I mean, technically used to be kind of part of the
jury's still out on him.
Thing. Okay, I think he's smart. I don't know. Anyway, but like you say, the splainiest. I don't know why I'm doubling down on this, but like then you have a whole nother website. It's kind of similar to Slate that its whole point is explaining things, and that is Vox. And Vox never bothers me. I love Vox, and it's just like it's just a tone thing. Well, the thing is, I guess Vox explains things. Slate is always contrarian a little bit. They always want to find that other angle.
Exactly. The story I really want to talk about today involving animals is from Texas, where a U.S. Customs and Border Protection division down there is having an issue. 300 vultures have been defecating and urinating all over a radio tower that the agency needs to communicate. I would say, is this God saying something to ICE? I mean, is God marshaling the birds of the air to try to thwart our border protection, quote unquote protection? Maybe. But there's some real dazzling deets in this story, Andrew. And I want to tell you, it's also going to get a little gross. And I apologize for that. But I found it to be fascinating. This is an article. Oh, Marissa Lotti writing in The Washington Post. I think we have read Marissa's stuff before. This is a great article, and there is a moment. Don't let me forget. There is a moment at the end of the article that I am, I give Marissa full marks on. Anyway, the vulture excretion is coating the entire 320-foot tower in southern Texas, including the interior part that workers have to touch. The government is seeking a vulture deterrence netting system, which they're going to install at some point. This is what the one of the spokespeople for CPB said, the vultures will often defecate and vomit from their roost onto buildings below that house employees and equipment. There are also anecdotes about birds dropping prey from a height of 300 feet, creating a terrifying and dangerous situation for those concerned. Imagine you're just walking around and a marmot just drops out of the sky whatever it is that this vulture was going for. Beyond the risk of vomit and prey falling from the sky, vultures have sharp nails and beaks that can cause deep scratches. The birds also, quote, regurgitate a reeking and corrosive vomit. Why do they do that, Andrew? Because it kills a bacteria on their legs. They vomit on their own legs to kill some kind of bacteria. The problem is that the reeking corrosive vomit eats through metal.
Good God.
So when they throw up on their legs to kill the bacteria, they end up throwing up on the radio tower, and it's corroding and eating through the metal of the radio tower.
My God. That reminds me of my – you know, my dad had that –
Your first wife?
Yeah. Remember my dad had that weird condition on his legs where he had to keep on throwing up on them? No. My dad, of course, worked you know, he ran a company that did a lot of steel fabrication kind of stuff, and that often meant, like, going to another company and maybe creating – liners for huge bins where things were made. And I'm pretty sure it was a Mountain Dew like factory of some sort. I think it was Mountain Dew, but it was some sort of a soft drink that was so acidic that it was just burning through the steel tanks. And it's like, this was something that we were like kids were drinking. But if you actually, they had to keep on replacing the steel on something. I'm messing up some of the details on that. I hope that I don't get
sued. Is that what Jack Nicholson's Joker fell into?
Yes, exactly. Oh, that was a debate that I have to whisper now because Genevieve is in the other room. And I don't want her to think that I use this podcast to talk behind her back. But we had a pretty vigorous debate, talking specifically here about the 1989 Batman movie, but also, you know, that being based on the comic book stories. Genevieve believed that Jack Napier, pre-Joker, fell into a vat of Smilex, and that's what turned him into the Joker. And I said, no, he just fell into a vat of toxic acid, sludge, right? And acid, yeah. Which then made him, you know, deformed, which gave him that smile, which then gave him the idea to lean into this Joker character. And then he created the Smilex gas and the Smilex products. And I'm pretty sure – I don't know if I got a okay, you're right out of Genevieve for that one, but I'm pretty sure the internet had my back on it.
Also, can I throw one more thing in? And look, I didn't – spend my afternoons playing Monopoly against a stuffed dog while listening to the Batman soundtrack. So you know more about
it. Okay, so you're not an
expert.
It was Risk, by the way. Jesus. You think I am a baby?
But also, I was under the impression, and this is just based on the Tim Burton film, which may not be, you know, sticking to the comic or whatever. I thought that he falls into the acid, his face gets burned, and then the surgery goes poorly, and his and that's where the smile actually comes from.
Yes.
Is the botched surgery to fix. So it's like the acid doesn't give him the smile, but it's like the crappy surgery does.
I agree with you. That was my understanding watching that movie on repeat as well. So anyway, I don't know exactly how I got. I keep on taking us pretty far afield of these stories. But okay, so vultures are vomiting Mountain Dew onto their legs. This, by the way, is why vultures have such a bad reputation in cartoons and stuff, because they're nasty animals.
Except the greatest vultures of all time, when depicted in popular culture, would be, of course, the vultures in the Jungle Book Disney movie that talk like the Beatles.
Oh, right. You know, I've never seen that, and I've never seen the Spike Jones remake either.
Will you do this? Do me a favor. Will you just Google vultures, the Jungle Book, Beatles, and see if you can maybe the clip will be isolated. It was, as a kid, it killed me. I thought it was the funniest thing. These vultures who had Cockney accents and mop tops, and they didn't actually even sing Beatles music. They sang barbershop music, but they talked and acted like the Beatles.
Hey, Flaps, what are we gonna do?
I don't know. What do you want to do?
I've got it.
Let's flap over the east side of the jungle. They've always got a bit of action, a bit of a swinging scene, all right?
Ah, come off it. Things are right and dead all over.
You mean you wish they were? Very funny.
Oh, that was like the Ringo character, I think.
Okay. Yeah, right? Didn't we talk on the show at one point about how it was like, I think that, was it Walt Disney? It was like, get the Beatles? And somebody had to explain to you the Beatles aren't going to be in the Jungle Book. I think there was...
I
have a vague memory of that. Anyway, yeah. Other than that, you're right. Vultures tend to get a pretty bad rap, and it seems to be somewhat deserving, although they can't help for it. You know, they can't help for it.
Is that a Philly thing?
That is Carrie's granddad, Rudy, who our dog slash one of my many Enterprise drivers is named for. Rudy used to famously say, he can't help for it. So it's like if somebody
like
was just
that.
Isn't that great? It's really actually very sweet. It's sort of like, if someone's, you know, a bit annoying or this, that, or the other, but you kind of just, you know, what's the point of belittling them over it? You'd say, he can't help for it.
Right. Who's the I don't know if Yogi is the right word. Who's the guy who died recently that you've mentioned several
Ram
times?
Ram Dass,
on the show?
Who I'm obsessed
yes.
with.
Yes. What was the quote that was going around from? I mean, there were a lot of quotes from him going around when he passed away a few weeks ago, but there was one specifically about like you go out into the woods and you look at a tree and you see that it bends this way and it bends that way and you realize that's because of the light and there was a fire and. That's the tree. Then you come out of the woods and you talk to humans and you criticize them for the way they are, but they grew up just like that tree. Did I totally butcher that? And is that not even him?
No, you didn't. Okay. I don't even know. I don't know if that's him. It very well might be, but you got the broad strokes of that absolutely right. And that's a very useful thing. I think I said this on the show too, but what he said about death was he said it's like slipping off a shoe that's a little bit tight, but that has served you well.
Oh, wow.
Like, oh, that's really beautiful because – it's like the point isn't – it's not just that like it sucks to be alive so we can't wait to get the shoe off. It's like the shoe has been serving us well, but it's also a bit of a relief to take off some tight shoes at the end of the day. And if we can look at death as being like that, that probably would do all of us some good.
But it is stinky. Did he get into that?
Yeah.
Because you've been wearing that shoe for a long time.
It whiffs right out of the car.
Stinky.
Did you see that? We're never going to get through this vulture story.
We're never going to get through this show.
There's still many. We're never going to get through this retreat. Someone's going to listen to this, and they're going to say, we're really rethinking
the resources we're
allocating to this.
Fair enough.
Did you see that there was some car company had to recall a sunroof because it had a chance of opening on its own and flying off the car? And somebody posted that with just a picture of the guy from that sketch.
How did that show become – I don't think I've ever seen, especially in comedy, I don't think I've ever seen just a single season TV show like that just become immediately like legendary. Like immediately just on board. Like just an instant classic, as they say. But I'm not saying that to be sarcastic. Like it really just immediately – it was just – it was iconic, I feel like.
Yes. I mean, we don't even talk about Bart Harley Jarvis, who's that baby – who's like a rock and roll baby that's in – have you seen the whole season of that thing?
I have, but I don't remember that one.
There's like a baby pageant. It's one of the, I would say, more surreal of the sketches. It's like a pageant for babies. And what's funny, though, is that the people really have their favorites, and they really dislike some of the babies. So it's like
that ring, you know, there's
sort of
a
clear cut favorites. But then there's this one baby called Bart Harley Jarvis who's wearing like a Harley Davidson like vest or something. And everyone hates that baby.
I don't. You know what? There are a couple that I watched. Oh, I'm looking at pictures of them and I have seen it. But there were a few that I was kind of like falling asleep during. I wonder if this is the one that had who's his partner?
Sam Richardson.
Sam Richardson. Yeah. If this is the one with Sam Richardson.
Is the MC of it.
Yes. This is one that I have a lot of blank spots on because I know I didn't see it in order because I don't even understand what his – doesn't he play some sort of a – he might be in a couple of them, but he's in a very surreal one that I feel like I didn't get and I need to go back and rewatch.
Which one?
Doesn't he play some sort of a Is he like an omnipresent being, or is he some sort of really flashy guy on a stage, some sort of cult of personality? I don't recall. Like I say,
oh, you mean in the Bart Harley Jarvis one?
Maybe. I don't know. I just have a vague memory
like,
of Sam.
He's sort of the MC of – he's the host of this baby pageant in that one. And then I'm wondering –
is it a very in-your-face performance by him?
I think he might be in a couple.
Okay.
Yeah, probably. So also – I was just thinking, I mean, this is so boring for the listeners, but I'm trying to rank my favorite. It's hard for me to rank my favorite sketches from that whole thing. I would put T.C. Tuggers really near the top for me because there's so many layers to it. Like, there's the fake kind of, teen drama element that they do a pretty good job of, like, mocking up, you know what I mean? Like, all the intros to it and the credits. There's the fake commercials for T.C. Tuggers, which I'm obsessed with. It's real, got a real playing with the boys vibe as these guys are all T.C. tugging. And there's Tim Robinson himself, who's like, and they're not a joke. Like, he keeps telling this dude, he's playing the principal, but he's telling him that these T.C. Tuggers are not, they're not, it's not a joke, it's not ironic. Anyway, that one's pretty high up near the top of the list. And then the car one, just by force of that, by dint of that guy, I don't even know his name, who's playing the guy who have no good car ideas. Guy, he's just so great. That is probably, don't you think that's maybe the most iconic of the sketches from that show?
Yes, and I think I'm surprised by that. I think in a certain way it's one of the more, not incomprehensible, but certainly one of the weirder skits.
Yes.
And for the fact that that one becomes iconic, you saw that somebody got Chris Hayes a throw pillow with like kind of an iconic version of him dabbing on it. It is the coolest pillow I've ever seen. Yes.
I put a tweet out when I was in Mexico. There was some kind of dance club or whatever, and to show you that this was a really fun, cool dance club to go to on the main street in Tulum, there was a giant painting of a skeleton dabbing, which is the weirdest thing I'd ever seen. I was like, okay, we know this was painted in the last 3 years.
Dabbing de Muerto.
Yes, there you go.
Was that the name of the club?
that was what it was called. Okay, so just to wrap it up on these vultures, the other thing that they do is they cough up undigested fur and bones of their prey, and then there are just piles of that everywhere around the radio tower, undigested bones and fur from their prey.
And their bones are money, right?
Sorry. There you go.
I can't.
You know what, Andrew? You have some good car ideas. Okay? Like, that was one right there. So they don't know how to get – I told you they're trying to put this net in, but they don't know if that's going to work. The way apparently that you get rid of vultures is you hang an effigy of a vulture.
What?
So you hang a fake vulture or a lifelike replica. You hang it upside down so that it looks like it's dead or struggling, and then birds don't like to come to an area where they see another bird is dead.
That is dark. That is some Vlad the Impaler shit. That is so dark.
That's some flayed man.
It is. Wow.
Also, they can't just kill the birds, though, because they're covered by a Migratory Bird Treaty Act of 1918. Thanks, Obama.
Yeah. So Trump hasn't gotten us out of that treaty yet?
The heck? Yeah, I believe he's working on that currently. So that's kind of a challenge, is trying to figure out how to get rid of them. The other problem is they don't want to completely get rid of all vultures, because the vultures serve a very important purpose out there, which is they clean up deteriorating carcasses, which keeps disease and bacteria down. So they actually play an important role. Remember, we were in Australia and we just kept seeing so many things dead in the outback, cows mostly, and a lot of kangaroos, and the cows would just it would bloat. I mean, it was wild to see that. And like, you know, I'm sure that there's a similar phenomenon in Texas. And so the vultures are actually serving a kind of an important job there. So you don't want to just get rid of all of them. Here is the part of this article written by Marissa Lati that I just thought was great. And I don't know how she got this.
I think it's Ayati, by the way. I think that's a capital.
Oh, okay. I do that a lot sometimes. Chioki, my friend from Wait and NPR, who we just had on LiveWire, I thought his name was Chioki Lianson for the longest time, but it's Iansen. But when I see a capital I, I get a little confused. What she snuck into this article that I can't believe got in the Washington Post, this whole long, well-researched, well-written article, and at the very end she says, "The vultures did not respond to a request for comment." How'd you get that into the Washington Post?
Well, the Washington Post, this is a topic. Get ready to get on your media for a second. Genevieve sent me a link.
Bum,
I'm trying.
Bum.
Thank you for doing that. I couldn't talk and do the music at the same time. Let me see if I can find it. But Genevieve sent me an email just with the subject line: "The Washington Post is just doing the Onion now," and it was this entire article. And it really was. It was just like it must have been, you know, one of their editorial writers or, you know, or like an op-ed, clearly. But it was like a whole fake story about how Democrats and Americans are surprised to learn that this whole time they've been in love with the terrorists. Here, let me just read the headline in the first graph here. Headline is, "Millions of Americans devastated to learn that they were ardent fans of Soleimani this whole time." First line is, "Millions of Americans who opposed President Trump's decision to kill Iranian Major General Qasem Soleimani in a drone strike were devastated to learn that actually they love the terrorist leader and could not possibly oppose this move for any other reason. Honestly," an American said, "I could not have picked the guy out of a lineup a week ago, and my reservations around his killing were that it felt like a dangerous escalation. But it turns out that I'm actually a big fan of his, who is sorry that he's dead." And it goes on from there, and they quote all, you know, all these fake quotes. It's not particularly funny, and in an era where, I don't know, something about this being under the Washington Post masthead, it kind of bothers me a little bit, because you and I have talked on this show before, like, you have the satirical magazines of note, of course, you think of like The Onion first and foremost, right? But then you also have the very low-grade parody newspapers that nobody's heard of, and to use your examples, kind of like, what, a bridge collapsed in my neighborhood? Oh, no, this is just a local unfunny publication that is printing lies and calling it satire.
Right.
And I just sort of feel like we live in this kind of murky world anyway, and just seeing this like completely fake, not particularly funny article under the Washington Post, and it's like, how about you just leave that to the Onion?
Yeah, I mean, that kind of stuff the tone is so important, and also the expectation of the reader is so important. Like, and in fact, I mean, even to this day, Onion articles semi-regularly pop up in the news because, well, maybe not so much the Onion because it is the brand is so strong. But, you know, those made-up stories sometimes will make their way into the real news. No one gets it that they're joking. And that's even if it's like The Onion or something like that, or Cracked or whatever. It's like, if you're the Washington Post, I feel like at least half of the people are going to misunderstand what you're saying. And it's also going to be – it's going to be fodder, I'm sure, for Tucker Carlson and his people, one way or the other. Like, somebody's mom is going to be posting that on Facebook confused as to the fact that it's satire. And it's going to be confirming a worldview that I don't agree with.
Yeah, I think that kind of feeds into it too. So anyway, to these vultures.
Final animal story. No, we're moving on from vultures to foxes that keep attacking the same 88-year-old guy in Maine, who, by the way, Andrew, is made of tougher stuff than you and I. Or at
I
least
find that hard to believe.
Tougher stuff than me. This guy is named Norman Kenny. He's 88 years old. 4 months ago, he's walking near his home in Maine, and a gray fox attacks him. And this is a little gruesome, and I apologize. In fact, I did recently Google, can you have a fox as a pet? Because I saw a fox running across the road when I was in Virginia, and it touched my soul. He killed this fox that was attacking him. He stomped it to death, which is unfortunate, but the fox probably had rabies. That's how I make that okay in my mind. I mean, you got to do what you got to do. If an animal like that is attacking you, you got to end it. Even me, the most sympathetic to animals person, would concur with that. That's a crazy thing. That's not even a once in a lifetime. That's out of 1,000 people, that might happen to one of them one time. 4 months later, the guy comes home. He closes his garage door. He hears a meowing sound. He thinks it's his cat. His cat is named April. He says, come on, April, let's go. Turns out it was another fox, also crazy, also attacking him. It charged at him. It starts biting his face and hands. It bit him. Ooh. Its tooth almost bit his eyeball out.
Oh, its God.
The fox's tooth barely missed his eyeball and bit him on the face. The fox knocked his glasses off. This guy's 88, so now he can't see. And so he's fighting this fox in the garage. He's wrestling with the fox for 12 minutes. He had a folding cane, which he kept hitting the fox with, but because it was a folding cane, It eroded into, the Washington Post calls it, it says, the cane with each blow eroded into a clunky weapon that only agitated the fox.
Oh, God. Poking a bear with a short stick.
Yeah, whacking a fox with a clunky cane. So the collapsible cane's not working. He then drops the cane. He grabs the fox by its throat. Again, this is a bit graphic. I apologize. He is in this article, and I'll should credit. This is Alex Horton writing in the Washington Post. Basically, what happened was I went to like the vulture story, and then it just started recommending every other weird animal related story for me. So I said, let's do it. Let's make it a triptych. He's dropped the cane, and he's grabbing the fox by his throat, and he is trying to feel for where the fox's windpipe is.
Oh, God. Oh.
The fox is struggling, and he finally finds what he can feel is where blood is pulsing under the coat of the fox. Now, the fox is not bleeding. This is just the blood moving through the body of the fox. And he's trying to strangle the fox, but the fox is 30 pounds and not 88 years old, so he is now getting very tired. A neighbor who's out for a jog jogs by, and so he basically tells this teenager, this neighbor kid, to come in here and put your foot on this fox's neck.
Oh, God.
Can you imagine?
No.
Like, I don't know if I would be able to do that. I think I would. Your 88-year-old neighbor is 12 minutes into a life, and I imagine it's like that fight that happens on Family Guy between Peter and the chicken.
Yeah, right, sure.
It's just, and then he's just like, get in here, stomp on its neck. I mean, I just don't know if I would have the constitution to do that.
This is Maine, right?
This is Maine. They're
flinty.
Yeah,
this sounds like Maine. Yeah, yeah.
So
it's the Texas of the North.
The teen apparently, I don't know if the teen stepped on the fox or not. It doesn't actually say. It just says that he advised the teenager to put his foot on the animal's neck. He then handed the teen his cell phone, which was dripping with blood that obscured the keypad.
God.
The kid can't dial 911 because there's too much blood on the phone from the fox fight.
Tarantino has gone too far this time. I'm just going to say it.
And it's revisionist history. And
yeah,
I don't...
right.
Although Brad Pitt is amazing as this 88-year-old guy. Very hot.
Very hot.
Very tight bod.
And congratulations on us for starting the show with a story about a quick brown fox and ending the show with a story about a quick brown fox.
Yes. Where's my bell? Right here. Oh, whoops. That's okay. But you know what?
I'll take it as a type of bell.
Gave us the money.
Exactly. Yeah.
Anyway, he was able to call 911 through the blood-covered phone. They came out. The fox is still not dead, by the way. They separate the fox from the 88-year-old guy. The 88-year-old guy is now in an ambulance because, again, the fox's tooth ripped his left eyelid, barely missing his eyeball. By the way, this you want to talk about flinty. Kenny received treatment for potential exposure to rabies. His most serious injury was to a thumb. He said also the fox's tooth ripped his left eyelid, barely missing his eyeball. That one has cataracts anyway, he said.
Wow.
Yeah, well, at least he didn't take my good eye.
Yeah, that definitely. It sounds sort of like my grandma. She was like kind of queen of the, well, what can you do? What can you say?
Yeah.
You know, she's always just kind of like, well, you move on.
So they're loading him into the ambulance, and then he just hears a gunshot go off.
Oh.
And that was the end of the fox.
And that's the end of the fox. And now I feel like our Monday meeting is even more important because we now need even more new listeners to replace the ones who have stopped listening after that grisly tale.
A little more dazzling deet on this guy in Maine. The fox that attacked him in September, okay, the first fox attack, which was ripping at his pant leg, he felt – this guy's actually very charming to me. He said, I said, I'm sorry, Mr. Fox, it's either you or me. That's what he said to the first fox that he had to end. He now has a different wooden cane, which is fashioned from a tree, he said, that was favored by his father many years ago. It'll bring more, quote, firepower to any future fox fight.
Now he's ready for it. He said to the first fox, he said, I'm sorry, Mr. Fox, but it's you or me. To the second fox, he said, this time it's personal.
It's personal. Yeah. Come to the coast. We'll have some fun. Have a few laughs. He was out running errands as of Tuesday morning when they caught up with him. His quote to the paper was, I got my big cane with me.
He'll have that cane everywhere he goes, probably.
I love that guy. I mean, I'm sad that these foxes, their lives were over, but he seems like kind of a cool dude.
All right, I know you know about TBTL, the podcast. You're listening to it right now. But have you tried TBTL, the newsletter? Because you can. Just go over to TBTL.net and click on the button that says sign me up for the TBTL newsletter. I gotta say, it's a lot of fun. Every week, Luke and I record a little video that we include in the newsletter. It's called Hey Dummies. We answer your questions, any questions you want to ask us. Well, there's all kinds of things in the newsletter. Don't take my word for it. Here, this is Mary. She's a big fan of the newsletter.
It has a nice welcome introduction, but then you have these phenomenal GIFs that are so much fun. You talk about amazing, wonderful people, and you introduce us to new things. And then the songs of the week. Oh, my gosh. And it just makes me so happy.
It can make you happy, too. I mean, listen, this is coming from Mary. She doesn't even listen to the podcast. She's here just for the newsletter. No joke. So, again, go to TBTL.net and click on the button that says sign me up for the TBTL newsletter. And we'll try to bring a little extra sunshine to your inbox every Friday afternoon.
Here I go once again with the email. Every week, I hope that it's from a female. Oh, man! It's not from a female.
You want to throw one email out there, or email out there before we skedaddle?
I got this email from Sana, if I'm saying her name correctly, S-A-N-A. It says, compliments to you. I'm Sana. Can I get to know you? Please, let's keep in touch. Here's my personal email address. It's a ZohoMail.com, by the way. Thanks. Yours sincerely,
Sana. Do we do ads
Sana,
for ZohoMail yet?
I'm wondering if ZohoMail is blocking the TBTL newsletter.
Okay. Sounds like that's a follow-up from Friday's show. So it turns out that was actually happening.
I don't know anything more than what I knew when I talked to you on Friday, but it does look like, at least for one of the email sends, Yahoo and AOL was blocking us, but it's unclear if it's something about the way we're listed in their, I don't know, in their roles, or if it was specifically because I mentioned a skin irritation and they thought it was a pharma email. I don't know. Here, let me play a voicemail from you. This is regarding, this is regarding a story that we talked about a while back now. I had mentioned staying in an Airbnb in Oakland. It was like a house in somebody's backyard, and a cat followed us in. And Veeves and I let the cat into our Airbnb and played with it for a while and then kicked it out. We weren't sure if we were breaking the law by doing that, but it turns out it was.
Stop messing with my discount.
I knew it. And it turns out the cats belonged to the owners, and that used to be their place before they refurbished it, and it was a barn or a shed or something. That was the cat's house, so that's why the cat was so into it. Anyway, that kind of got us into a conversation about letting strange cats into your house. Veeves and I, this is something that we've done. Like, when we were in New Hampshire, there was a cat. We don't know who it belonged to, but we called it Morris because it looked just like Morris the cat. And it was super friendly, and we would let it into our house, and Theo was just so beside himself angry, just like, how are you letting this other cat in the house? He's hissing. He's going in the other corner. Morris just kind of struts in and just jumps right on our bed. And just like, kind of, we're just like, all right, Morris, you can stay on our bed for a while. Well, a listener, Hannah in Ohio, has a cautionary tale.
Hey, guys. You were talking today on the podcast about Andrew and Genevieve's friendly cat encounters and wanting to let it into the Airbnb and all that good stuff. And Luke talked about how apprehensive he is of letting strange cats into places. Well, that reminded me of, in my neighborhood, there was a cat that was just kind of super friendly. Anytime we were outside, he would come up to us and snuggle us and, like, want to be petted and held and just a complete delight, you know. So one day, my boyfriend was like, it's outside. Let's just let it in for a little while. We don't know who it belongs to, but it belongs to somebody, I'm sure. He started feeding it, you know, and then let it inside. And I was the first like, arr, no cats inside. It's going to, like, be a monster. You don't know. Like, we don't want to get this started. But then he started to be super friendly and, like, rubbing on me. And I was like, oh, you sweet animal. You don't belong to me, but you are adorable, and I will take all of your love. So, it was inside, and we kind of were, you know, with it, and it was cuddling up on the bed. Okay. And I was making dinner, and then I go back in there, and I then smell the smell of cat urine.
Aww.
And I was like, what did this cat do? Basically, the cat peed on our bed, on the mattress, all the way through the blankets, pretty much everywhere. So I immediately went, like, rage mode on the cat and, like, picked it up and took it outside and then spent, like, the next half hour or so kind of, I told you so, my boyfriend, that he should have let wild loose animals into the place, even though they're super friendly. And I spent even longer than that trying to get the smell of cat urine out of our blankets and mattress. So, yeah, that's good advice, not to let strange, even though very friendly, cats into your house, because they could possibly pee everywhere.
Not Morris. Morris would never do that to us.
I'm sure I've told this story on the show many times, but when my sister Sarah and her now husband Josh were first dating, again, Sarah and Josh, the ones that run Pollo Bravo in Portland at the Pine Street Market, please everybody go there, buy delicious chicken from them and other such things. They were dating, but my sister Sarah lived with my sister Liz, lived in her basement. And a cat, a stray outside cat, was under the bed in the middle of the night and came out and started fighting, I believe, slash urinating, slash possibly vomiting on her and her, like, recent boyfriend in the middle of the night in a dark basement room. That could scar you for life.
Yes, it could. Now, was the cat doing it because it had something on its legs and it needed to vomit on its legs in order to get it off its legs?
Looking back on it, I think that's precisely what was happening.
It's obvious now, right? It's one of those
things. So we kind of can't blame the cat. A different time, I think it was... So the problem was my sister Liz had this cat named Georgie, who apparently was a real hoe. Turned it into a real old-fashioned whore home, that house. And so all of the tomcats would come tomcatting around for Georgie, and one of them got into the wall, so far into the wall that my brother-in-law, Jason, had to cut a big section of wall open so that they could get this random stray cat out of the inside of their wall where it was about to die.
Oh, my God. Wow, that kind of trumps your snake problem, which, by the way, I assume if you ever have an
update on this. What snake problem? That's the official. Listen, if I ever try to sell my house, the answer is, what snake problem?
I meant to say, that trumps your story about that gorgeous pet snake that you had for a little bit.
Yeah, that I then safely returned to the pet store.
Exactly. Yes, a.k.a. the woods.
Yeah. All right. That's going to do it for, I think, for today's show. So by now, I'm sure that we've wowed the assembled American Public Media staffers. We've done trust falls. We've thrown marshmallows at each other. We've played two truths and a lie. What are some other things that happen at retreats?
Well, things did get a little bit weird with the brains on people because things got a little bit competitive between us. Mm-hmm. But I think that I'm looking forward to kind of smoothing out those relations as things go forward.
Should we, when we deal with the brains on people, just perform in the characters that we've performed on brains on? So you be a goldfish. Yes. Actually, no. The other one is even better. What were you, like a toe? Like a toe fungus?
I was some sort of a gross foot fungus, I think. Yeah.
Digger, were you Digger a dermatophyte?
But wait a second, though. I wasn't the goldfish, right? No, I was.
You were.
No. Was,
oh,
I thought the
no,
whole thing was
else.
No.
You were dating a goldfish.
I was dating a goldfish who forgot our anniversary because goldfish don't remember things that well.
But you were – I don't think you were a goldfish. I think you were maybe – you were some other
sea
life.
No, I wasn't. Exactly, right. Yeah, because I didn't have the memory problem that the goldfish
– And then I was a salesperson who sold stinky shoes. Stinky shoes that had been stunk up by – celebrity athletes. So there was like a Serena Williams shoe that smelled like she had just played tennis in it or something.
So gross. I was a clam, by the way.
Oh, that was it. Uh-oh, here we go.
Hey, honey, I'm home. Oh, dinner and flowers?
Hi, goldfish, darling. Do you like it?
Who doesn't like a nice romantic dinner with their handsome clam husband?
Clam.
How thoughtful.
Goldfish. You forgot.
No, I didn't forget. How could I forget my hubby's birthday? Look, Clam, I got you this file folder. It's Manila, your favorite color.
It's not my birthday.
Psych.
That is some good acting. That I will never be able to listen to that without just turning fire red inside my skin. It's so bad. I am such a bad actor.
You are not. Listen, I don't think you're a bad actor. I think that maybe if they would have coached you up a little bit, if they would have let you listen to who you were playing off of, you would have maybe delivered it slightly differently. I don't think you're a bad actor.
I'm a bad actor. I'm certainly an irrational actor, and I think I might be a bad actor as well on the international stage.
Okay.
Anyway.
Good. All right.
More of that on tomorrow's show.
Okay. Well, listen, thanks for tuning in for the show, everybody. We're going to be back here tomorrow with more Imaginary Radio for all of you, and I'm sure a full report from our retreat and what's been going on so far.
If there's no show on Tuesday, it didn't go well, by the way.
Yeah, exactly. There was a trust collapse, which is a really bad scene. Safe travels out here, Andrew.
Thanks. You have a good evening there. And then next time I see you, we will be watching a very important football game tomorrow.
Yeah, I want to wrap this up by saying go Vikings, go Seahawks, but it's already happened. Whatever happened has already happened.
You can still
it's in the
it
past
yeah.
as you're hearing this. So Godspeed. Godspeed to all of our favorite teams, whichever teams they may be. All right, thanks for listening. See you tomorrow. Until then, please remember, no mountain too tall.
And good luck to all.
Power out.